You're tuning in to KTOO's Juno Afternoon, and I'm your host, Mandy Nguyen. Our next guests today are Rasmussen Award winners, Christy Nami Eriksson. Welcome to the show, Christy.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Of course. And welcome, Karina Cook.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you both for being here on the show with me today. I'm really excited to be speaking with you both and hearing about your projects. First, I want to say congratulations, and I would love for you both to introduce yourselves in whatever way feels right to you. If Nami, you would like to start, if that's okay.
Sure. Christy Nami Eriksson. Some people call me Christy, some people call me Nami. I'm an artist, teaching artist, and community organizer here in Juneau.
Great. And Karina?
Yeah, thank you. I'm Karina Cook. I had the great privilege of growing up out North Douglas, and I'm an essayist. So I move about a bit, and I'm continually dialoguing with Southeast Alaska in virtually everything I write.
Yeah. Are you still in Juneau or are you elsewhere?
I am calling you from McCarthy in the Wrangell Mountains.
In the mountains. Okay. Very cool. Yeah. Maybe to start, I would love to hear about your projects and kind of the origin story of your projects. If Karina, would you be comfortable starting?
Yeah, happily. I'm very interested in the most divisive histories that our communities have to live with, and I'm curious about ways of living with some of these most divisive and aggressively assimilationist histories. I'm interested in how we can grieve together. I'm also interested in how we can do some of the important healing that needs to happen in order for communities to really cooperate quite creatively and innovate their way into this kind of changing climate and ecologic upheaval, you know, that we all have to navigate together as Northerners. I was very inspired by a show I saw a few years ago at the Alaska State Museum, and that was when I decided that I wanted to get really spend some concerted time working with a practice called ekphrasis, which is a super cool word with Greek roots. And it just has to do with one artistic medium dialoguing with the work of another artistic medium. So I used writing to dialogue with visual arts, and that helps me think through my questions.
Thank you. Nami?
Yeah, sure. So some words I use to describe my art is that I'm a multidisciplinary poet. Meaning I write poetry, but then the end product is presented in a variety of forms. So sometimes it's just poems on a page, and sometimes it's videos, sometimes it's just audio, sometimes it's live performance, etc. And this particular project allows me to really focus on generating a new body of work, focused on the Korean adoptee experience, specifically in the teenage years, with the intention to then use that for, you know, some of those different mediums, to then turn them into some performances and some video, as well as a YA novel in verse, young adult novel in verse, that I've been working on putting together. So, you know, in terms of where that idea originated, I mean, it's hard to really decide exactly where things originate. But certainly I think poetry for me has always been a really important tool to help me feel more connected with myself and feel more connected with the world around me by kind of creating space for my story or people like me's story. And, you know, growing up, I certainly it doesn't really have a lot of examples in fiction or in art that really reflected my experience. And, you know, that has really fueled a lot of my work, both for my own work as well as a teaching artist, and really wanting to try to create those spaces and empower those voices and stories. Yeah. You know, I think when I'm thinking of the teenage years, especially, it's a time of, you know, really trying to figure oneself out. And I'm excited to work on a YA novel in verse, which the idea for which, you know, came from my friend Genevieve Gagne-Haas, who is an editor at Writer's House. And she's been kind of cheerleading me, coaching me, counseling me towards generating work that would be the right fit for their agents. And so we landed on YA novel because, you know, the form itself, I think, really lends itself to aspects of my writing background that started in spoken word. You know, there's a real emphasis on voice, on rhythm, on flow in the form. But I think in a more widespread way, I think that the YA genre in general is where a lot of really daring, diverse voices are finding space right now in fiction. And it's also a place where you really explore coming of age, which I think, you know, now as an adult, I know that I come of age multiple times in my life, not just when I'm a teenager. And so I think that that's why a lot of adults, as well as young adults, read YA fiction. So I'm just really excited to try to, you know, use poetry in service to some themes that I think we explore throughout our lives, you know, around loss and around identity.
Yeah, I really love that. And I also resonate with what you were saying about kind of working and creating a body of work around themes and topics that you didn't see growing up. For me, it was very similar. I'm Vietnamese American and I'm the daughter of refugees, and I definitely didn't have any narratives to show me the way growing up. But I also love what you said about we grow up multiple times, or I forget exactly how you worded it, but kind of that idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Karina, I really I'm interested in the questions that you were asking through your art, whether it's how do we grieve together, how do we heal together? And I'm curious, what have some of those working answers been? Because I know those things are not just cut and dry, here's the answer to that, but just what have you been inspired by? What are your working answers? What have you been finding out as you've been working on your projects and just exploring and researching? And also, one more thing, I said we might have to rush a little bit, but now we no longer have to, so we can take our time together. Yeah.
I love that sentence.
Well, I can tell you a little bit about a couple of different essays that I'm working on, one that's in really early drafting stages and one that that I think is pretty close to a final, you know, it's in like draft number 11 by now. I will abandon it soon, wow. I hope. and so this one that's quite a ways along is about, it's about swans, and it's about these interpretive signs at Marsh Lake in southern Yukon that kind of celebrate and teach us about swan migration. And the piece also thinks quite a bit about a work of art by Doug Smarch, who created a feather screen out of swan feathers. And he uses that screen to project images onto it. And he tells a really important story from his community, Teslin, Yukon, with that swan feather screen. The story is a story of when the road comes through. So Yukon has no road in it until the US military builds a road through Yukon to tie Alaska into, you know, the rest of the North American road system. So this is happening post-World War II. And in Doug Smarch's community, They didn't know that any of this was coming. They saw these two mysterious white lights bobbing on the hill one night. And the next day, it turns out to be, you know, a government work crew. They dropped down the hill, and there's been a road that goes through Teslin, and it's been there ever since. One thing that I get about healing together there is how the road is really everybody's business. The road is, in a very complex way, what permits me, as a, you know, a curious researcher, to move around, you know, easily and quite freely, and often very safely, through this whole boreal forest ecosystem that that's, you know, our closest neighbors in Southeast. And at the same time, that road is responsible, in large part, fairly responsible for a lot of the social problems, you know, that I'm asking all these questions about in the first place. And so when I see a work of art that really ties that history both to the community and to the ecosystem, these larger ideas of trumpeter swan migrations, you know, moving across the land. We've always been moving across the land, whether we're people or animals or plants, and certainly we're doing it before there was a road moving us across the land. And so that use of natural materials to tell a very human history from a number of angles at once is what's really illuminating to me. I'll give another quick example. I'll be much quicker with this one. I was in the Yukon archives looking at the materials that the Anglican Church has decided to make public about their residential school history, and one of the staff there who brought me the materials I had requested on residential schools on a very painful history, she was very interested in my materials, and she waited for me to open the folders, and she pointed at them and she said, "My grandma went there." She said, "My mom went there." And she said, "But it stops with me." And spontaneously began talking to me about her carving. And it turns out that I had heard quite a bit about her, and I, you know, was very excited for the chance to do a spontaneous artist interview in the archives. But I thought that was just the clearest statement, you know. It stops with me. It stops with my carving. That's what she said.
Right. And before we kind of revisit that a little bit more, I'm curious, what questions you might be exploring through this particular project or your work in this particular moment.
You know, I think as a poet, I think I'm really maybe more of a weaver, you know, but with time. And so I think when I want to explore a time in my life, you know, in the 90s, I think that starts with exploring, you know, my life now, and even my life in the future, you know. So I think, you know, a question people have been asking a lot is just kind of like, how has the project changed because of, you know, everything that's kind of happened this spring and summer? And for me, you know, certainly the logistics changed, but I think that the themes that I'm wanting to explore, you know, around loss and grief and like who we are in this world, I think, wow, what a time to explore them, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think I have been spending a lot of time just kind of sitting with and making my way through, you know, some of those big feelings that are more complicated because of my history and more complicated because of my birth mother's history and her mother's history, and my future ancestors' history will be colored by this time. And so as I pay close attention to just my life now and the way it's unfolding and the way the world is changing, I don't know how yet, but I know that it will inform, you know, this project, even though the project framework around it is just around this time in the 90s, you know, but it's more than that. So I guess that's something I'm exploring, is just the way that those themes are connected.
Yeah.
Across time and space.
Yeah. And as you're saying, it is such a particular time to do that. Like, there's so much to examine right now. Maybe a little too much is what it feels like sometimes, but
there's always lots to examine.
Yeah.
Even in space, you know.
That's right. Karina, kind of going back to you, how is progress on your project now? Like, where are you?
Oh, thanks for asking that. I wish I could give you a really firm answer. The truth is that I can't. There was a time when I did a full word count and the number was 25,000 words. I know that I'm past that now. I can't tell you exactly where I'm at. I can tell you that I have a chart, and that the chart tells me what thematic gaps still need filling. And that's part of why I've recently gone back to my my folder of notes from the archives, and my archival look at residential schools in Southern Yukon. At this point, there is an enormous amount to do, really, in terms of trying to honor the research files I've put together, basically. It's very stimulating work to do human research and community research, and to look at art and free write and check out every book from the library. It's just a thrill. But at this point, you know, I really have to buckle down and craft something. And that's slow going. There it is.
Yeah. No, I mean, it sounds like a lot of work. And I love that you have a chart that shows you your thematic gaps. I think that's great.
Oh, thank you. And unfortunately, this chart actually has a mind of its own. And the more I write, the gaps, they multiply. There's another aspect of this.
I identify with that.
We love that about work, when you start working and you're like, oh, I have a lot more to do than I thought I did. Wow, my mind completely went blank. Anyway, I'm very happy to be speaking with you both. This is really interesting. I remember what I was going to ask now. Karina, has that impacted your way of thinking about the project at all? Or kind of, because there is a lot to examine now. Not that there previously wasn't, but yeah, I'm just curious how this moment in time has shaken things up for you, if at all.
Yeah, there are a number of ways to get at that, I feel. One of them has to do with my own writing process. Like everyone, I'm stressed out and quite concerned. That's draining. That's a problem. Beyond that, something pretty fascinating about our current global pandemic situation is that it certainly brings up some really traumatic histories here in the North. So we have quite an established track record, right, of doing deep damage to all kinds of Indigenous communities, by introducing a germ. And those memories are really, I think, on our minds collectively. And for me as an individual, I've been working on this project for just over 2 years now. And so while I feel very much in swing and like I want to, in a lot of ways, resist dialoguing with my present experience, which I have not had time to digest, I can't help but recognize that there is some present urgency in the question of disease and colonialism. There's also some really obvious ties between disease and the changing climate. As our ecology is shifting, you know, that's happening on the level of melting ice, but that's also happening on the level of, you know, evolving microbes. So I can't promise you that I will be, you know, writing a book that really speaks directly to this pandemic moment.
Sure.
But I also, you know, I certainly can't promise you that this pandemic moment won't be woven in its way throughout a lot of these pages.
Right. No, that makes sense. We're still very much in it. It feels like so many of us are still trying to grapple with just everything that's happening. And it does make me really curious as to 5, 10, 20 years from now, like how the present will become a part of our history. And I understand that's also kind of a constantly evolving and like, yeah, a constantly evolving ground. It's not as if history is a static thing. And Nami, this is something that I was wondering about. It's a little bit of a different question. Okay, so I have two. Is kind of where are you at in your YA novel, and what has been inspiring you recently and keeping your fire going? So those are two separate questions.
Sure. Where am I at in my YA novel? I am at the part where I do an interview with KTO up, so I'm going to check this off the list. Yeah. No, I think I had 20 to 30. So a YA novel in verse is a whole, imagine a fiction novel, but that on each page is a poem.
Yep.
Or, you know, it spans two pages maybe, you know, so it's just a series of poems that are telling the story instead of prose. And I think I was at about 30 poems and then just took a real big break. So I'm at 30 poems and KTOO interview is where I'm at on that. But like I said, I think, and maybe to echo a little bit of what Karina is saying, that, you know, I think that it's not all a linear experience. Like there are slow parts, there are fast parts. There are fast parts that then generate more work, you know? And so it's tough to really, you know, show you a status bar and kind of where that, and, you know, certainly like I was saying, this time right now informs my work, even if it doesn't equal a word count for me. Your second question, what's inspiring me to, can you repeat?
Yeah, I can repeat it. I'm just curious what's been inspiring you and keeping your fire going during this time.
Right.
Yeah.
Since March, I feel like I've been experiencing a few pandemics. You know, I've certainly been experiencing the coronavirus pandemic, you know, public health pandemic, and you know, as was, I think, illustrated well in June, is also racism as a pandemic.
Yeah.
And really seeing, you know, I'm excited by the uprising, and I also feel the stress of my system as a result of, you know, it's just a heightened experience of that pandemic. And I also lost my father. My father died in March. So I've been experiencing like an inner world pandemic. And I think a lot of the recommendations from CDC have been helpful in all three for me. You know, I've hunkered down and I've developed a routine. You know, I try to take good care of my health and my family, and I'm trying to look out for my community. And, you know, and I think that how community is framed is different for those different pandemics, but, you know, I think they all work together. And I, for me in this time, that's been, you know, just kind of a little bit suffocating. I think, finding the spaces, to breathe and finding, ways to stay grounded, are the most inspiring for me, because they give me some grounds for survival, and which is the very first step for art to thrive. So I've just been trying to do a massive amount of slowing down.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm glad to hear that you are, in your ways, able to find some space and some grounding. It is really important. I resonate with that. And as we kind of close off, I also would like to ask, where can listeners find more of your work or just more information and kind of keep up with you both? If Nami, you want to share first, and then we'll jump to Karina.
Okay, sure. You can go to my website, which may or may not be updated, tsunami.com, T-S-U-N-A-M-E-E. You can find me on Facebook or Instagram. Yeah, I think those are the main ones. Kristi Nami Erickson. And I look forward to meeting you.
And Karina?
Yeah, thanks for asking. My website is karinacook.com. If you spell my first name correctly, you'll get there a little quicker, but it'll probably turn up either way. But C-O-R-I-N-N-A-C-O-O-K. So that's the site. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you both for coming onto the show and kind of bearing with the weird Zoom format, but I really appreciated being able to speak to you both. Thank you.
It's been a super fascinating experience to see the radio from afar.
Sure.
Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it.
Of course. All right. Take care.
Thanks, Nancy.
Bye.
If a Korean woman cleans her mind out in the spring, and you are still in it, she loves you. If you walk out of a Korean woman's kitchen, and there is rice on your sock, she loves you.